Hello, welcome back to Seeking Scale. This is Craig Hewitt with Andy Baldacci. Andy, how's it going?
Pretty good. Like we were saying before we hit record, it does not feel like we're in the Northeast right now. It's been, right now it's 69 degrees outside and sunny. So this is a very nice early November. How are things on your end?
Yeah, man, good. Yeah, been like a solid week of work of like really thoughtful stuff, right? And solving problems, but also just pretty chill, you know? So it's nice to have kind of the mental bandwidth to like not be putting out fires and like running around with like extreme urgency, but just like with purpose and thinking through stuff a lot. So yeah, it feels pretty nice. Finally recovered from traveling the week before. And I think that's part of it is just like not being fucking tired.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for us, it's been like a long stretch of like illnesses for our 4-month-old. And like, he's been doing fine, but it's just kept him home from daycare. I mean, in the beginning, it was obviously like, if he's contagious, we don't want to spread that, even though that's obviously where he got it from in the first place. But still, like, when we know he's sick, we're not going to send it back. But as he gets better, we got a message saying that, like, there was a case of RSV amongst another infant in his room. And it's like, okay, like, we don't want to send him back now that he's like finally after a couple of weeks getting better to then just get sick again. So he's been home. This is two and a half weeks. And so I've unfortunately been able to get help from my parents and my in-laws. But it's been like a tough on the work front, but at the same time, it's been good in that, I mean, having a baby to begin with forced me to prioritize better. But it's like this to the nth degree where it's just clear like, hey guys, like I can't schedule a call because like I don't know when I'm going to be free at all. So like here are the times where we can chat and it's got to be quickish. And like we can only hit these things if they don't matter. Then like I just trust you to just like make a decision and move on. And so it's helped me delegate a lot more and get clearer on responsibilities across the team. Because effectively, like these last couple of weeks, I have not done any individual contributor work. Like anything that relied on me, either I said, we're not doing it, or Jordan or someone else from the team took it over. And there's still stuff I would like to have gotten done. But at the same time, I'm very confident in the value that I've been able to add by just focusing on a handful of things that really do matter and like moving the needle there. So I'm finally like coming around to the idea that I think we all like logically understand that it's not about the exact numbers you are like at your computer working as far as like how much value are you providing, but it still can be really hard to just accept that. You're like, I should be doing more. And then sometimes you realize like, well, like the more I was doing doesn't actually add any value and everything else.
Totally.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Feeling much better about that. And our growth has actually accelerated in October, not like a crazy amount, but it was already like going pretty good. And so we were able to make a big hire to help plug some gaps on the team. And yeah, it's just been realizing, okay, I want to now embrace the idea that not that I'll never do individual contributor work, but I don't want, if it's important, it shouldn't depend on me, regardless of baby or whatever else. It's just like, yeah, we are at a spot where our team should be able to move forward on these things.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to derail our plan here a lot, right? So there's three things I want to talk about there. One, are there things about delegation that you've learned that you think make you more comfortable with doing it? You know, two, how are you doing with delegating marketing? And then three, like, I want to get an update on your executive assistant and like how that's going. But like, I think the first one is maybe the most important because it talks to the other two. It's like, Andy, what have you learned about delegation and how to be successful?
No, it's like, that's the thing is nothing has changed in my mind about like, oh, now I see the value of delegation. It's like, no, like I've always intellectually understood that. It's just where things diverge is when it's like in the moment, taking a step back and being like, oh no, this is where I need to be more hands off and hand it over. It's like, it's just really hard to follow through with it, even if you get it. And I have just accepted that, like, I need forcing functions and they can't be like self-imposed ones. Like me just saying, I'm no longer going to do individual contributor work won't do anything, because if there's not like a reason why I literally cannot find the time to do this, then I'm going to do it. And so I don't have a great answer for it. It's just other than like, no, I still, it's more just like, yeah, don't get a ton of sleep and then don't have any time to do anything anyway. So when a thing comes up, you're kind of cranky and you're just like, no, we don't need to do this. Just forget I brought this up. Like, let's just, half the things are just things I created or invented that could be, have some value, but not that much. And so it's like a lot of it was just saying, oh yeah, let's just not even worry about this. Not even just now, but ever. And then as for those other things that are important, it's being like, whenever I would get into my default of like, okay, like Jordan's like, check in with this contract we're working and then tell me what happened. And then like, we'll figure out what to do next. And it's like, that's like, it's always been hard for me to just like completely remove myself from the process. And I've known it's not efficient, but when I don't have the time to spare, it's just like, either this doesn't get done or we can't, I can't micromanage it like my personality would lead me to do. So it's like, oh no, this should get done. Jordan, here's how I would think about it. If it doesn't cost like $10,000 for this project and is roughly around this amount of time, then just like, do it. That's fine. And then just like, let me know afterwards. So yeah, it's there's no like, this is what got me to do it. It's more just, I had to. And I was cranky.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think those forcing functions are really good. The one thing that I have run into recently, it sounds like you're kind of getting to this, is like, I think we all do a good job of like delegating to a person, explaining the problem and the kind of solution that we want. But then like defining success has been like the big thing. I lean on OKRs a little bit to do that, but like you can do it on a smaller scale and say like, okay, you know, Jordan or Matt on our team, you know, I would like you to kind of take charge of this thing and blah, blah, blah. And the success looks like this. In the next 2 months, we will do this. In the next month, we'll do that. And we'll check in on like regular intervals. And like, I don't do it all the time, but when I do it, there's just so much more cohesion between like what's in my mind and like what actually happens. Cause like nobody wants to do a bad job, right? I think like most of the time when folks do a bad job, it's because they don't know what good is. That's like a place where I beat myself up a lot, where like delegating to the team has not worked out as well as, you know, me being amazing and doing it myself. So that's just a learning I've had.
For us, a lot of what it's been is just refining our meeting structure and like when we meet, who's on those meetings and what is the purpose. And I mean, in the beginning, it was like Matt and I would have a call every Monday and kind of figure things out, then go and get it done. But it was clear that like on the product side, I might have an idea of what this is going to look like. He would have a different one, and then the developers would have a different one. And without more coordination, it would go off the rails. So we found it was like, okay, we need to be doing more of at least packaging things up before, even if we're doing it ourselves, like we need to get enough details up front in the planning stages so that we can be sure when it does get handed off or when we do it, we're doing the right thing. And then that pendulum kind of went too far where there was too much of these planning calls and too many cooks in the kitchen in some cases, but more it was just like too many steps before the work got in progress. And recently it's been just saying like, look, like we're going to have an inefficient but effective call each morning with, first it was me, Ben, and Matt. Jordan's on that call now as well. Where it's like, I don't know, we just call it like a planning call. Like, I don't know what it really is, but we then just sort of focus on what is like the most important thing our company could be doing. And then how can everyone support that? And if they can't, because it's just like not, there's not a way for their skills to line up with this, what is the most important thing for them to be doing? And then if it doesn't fit in that, we don't do it, or we say no to it or whatever else. And so, but then it's Matt, Ben, and Jordan go back to the rest of the team and work with them to flesh things out in more detail. But we make sure that the four of us have, it's never going to be perfect, but like a pretty, like a very clear view of what we want to have done for this. And then I trust them all and they all trust each other to then carry that out throughout the team. And then we've just been doing a brief daily stand-up with the four of us we've been trying to keep them super short. They've been longer when we've been in the middle of some like very big changes, but we keep them brief and just say like, okay, like here's where it came back. Like, does that line up with what we were all thinking about this of like, is this what we were trying to build? Here are some issues. Does that change our prioritization? And it would be great to not have to check in that much. But I think in order to make that work, you have to plan way, way more upfront. And I think that just like takes more time, but inherently you're not going to be able to catch everything. So we just try to get it good enough and then have really quick check-in points frequently to keep it on track and just kind of constantly course correct.
Yeah. I mean, I think like in the development world, you would call that agile, right? Like, and that's the whole point. It's like quick check-ins, course correcting as stuff comes up or you realize there's shit you missed or the situation changed, you know, that happens too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I forget, what were the other things you mentioned? One was VA, so we can talk to that, but what was like the middle one?
Yeah. So like, are you delegating marketing? Because I know that's like the individual contributor thing that's been on your plate, or is it just kind of not happening or taking a different form or whatever?
Kind of like, I don't know. I do feel like we have through a lot of work and iteration over the earlier years, like built as close to like a lead generation marketing machine as we can get, that it doesn't run itself, but it at this point runs very well with like clearly defined processes that Ruben on support, Madison, my EA, and Jordan and Andrew, just different pieces. Like, we've got the process down. That machine runs and powers most of our growth. And there's a lot of other like marketing things I want to do. But when I'm honest about the actual potential, none of them are like, ooh, this is more important than me figuring out the strategy around our new pricing plan or like whatever else. It's just like nothing makes that cut. And so Jordan, for the most part, runs the documentation when features are coming out. He'll create the documentation. I mean, like, we had a long period of time where it was like, all right, like, Jordan, like, put together the outline. Then we're going to review it. Then you're going to record it. Then I'll review the draft. And now it's like, no, like, fuck it. Like, man, like, you know, is this going to be exactly the way I would do it? Like, no, but will you do a very good job out of the gate? Yes. Like, okay, just here's what you're going to create. Go create and like, let me know when it's done. So I know that it is done, but that's it. So as far as like the lead generation, that's running with our current team, but it doesn't take much oversight. The more like content educational side is handled by Jordan. And then the other piece that I know I talked about for a while in here was about like hiring a copywriter and this and that. And I just realized like, fuck, like, I spend so much time writing these emails that go out, and I think they're like very good emails. Like, I do pat myself on the back on like my email copywriting, but I just have to take a step back. And this is something I don't think many people think about, but it's like, okay, who are you reaching with this message and what is their inherent value? For the highest value people you can reach are going to be the people who are already paying you money. For our product, at least, those people who are not going to be likely to churn, like who are our good customers, who are active customers, we reach them by just sending a one-sentence message in the app saying, hey, we've got a new video out on this. What I could write an amazing email, send that out to our list of 35,000 people, which is like pruned regularly and everything else, but like it's still, that might get a few hundred extra views after I send it out. When we started just sending something out in intercom, saying like, hey, this new video's up, that would add 1,000 views in like hours. And so I was like, why am I like stressed? Why am I spending so much time on these emails when I can spend, I still probably spend too much time on the intercom thing, but it's like, I'll spend 15 minutes thinking about how to phrase it, put it out there. And it's like, okay. So the people who aren't in the app, even if they are customers, are just inherently less valuable to us because they haven't given us money, or they were giving us money and canceled. And so it's not that we shouldn't have some nurturing things, but you are trying to squeeze juice out of something that's dried up. And yeah, if you can automate that, you should, and you don't want to like let anything go to waste. But a lot of where my time was focused was on things that just frankly, from like a marketing perspective, matter, but from just like a pure numbers standpoint, it's like, no, I could just not do any of this at all. And like, if we do these other things instead, we'll still grow. A lot of it has just been borderline like ruthless about just like, yeah, we're just not going to talk to these people anymore.
I hear you. I think that the way we think about that, I think it's a whole separate episode, but we're looking at like our customer activation and like trial to paid conversion ratio a lot right now. And it's the same thing, right? It's like, hey, there are people that come in and want to get started. They want to get started. They want to use our tool. They want to be successful as a podcaster, and we need to help them get over the line. And there's another group that just comes in, starts a trial, and then flakes, right? And never does anything after that. And so I think we're trying to figure out how to think about both groups in terms of like messaging and the ways we interact with them and stuff like that. It's a whole nother episode. I don't want to get into it right now, but I think that from like,
let's talk about it a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, I think that concept applies to like marketing and customer acquisition, like with the, you know, kind of avatars and ICPs that you have, but also in like, once someone is in your app, whether they're paying you or not, I guess that's even third, right? Like existing customers are not all the same.
What would happen in
trials?
When someone starts a trial or is about to start a trial before the account actually, or maybe like it gets sent to Stripe or it gets sent at least to your email system so you have their address and can communicate with them. What if you said like, do you have a podcast yet? And if they say no, you do not let them start a trial. You can send them to educational resources somewhere else, but like why, if there is someone you know is not a good fit right now. It's not that they can't be, but it's like, till they have a podcast, what are they even going to do when the podcast hosts, even just on the trial? And I guess it's like, as a thought experiment, like, what if you just didn't let them start it? And then from there, you can branch off and say, okay, other people who don't have a podcast, how many of them have realistic expectations about what success looks like for a podcast? And then realistic expectations and ability to put in the effort to get there. If they don't, send them like a blog post and tell them like, come back later. But for the ones that do, it's like, okay, now they're worth a little bit more. And same with like the ones who start the trial, they've got a podcast. So they actually can be worth the effort. And that way you're not diluting. It's not even just the messaging, but it's just you get so much more noise from all the replies to these emails. Even if you're speaking specifically to the better part of that segment, you're going to probably hear more from the part that it doesn't speak to, because they're like, well, what about this? What about that? And it's like, no, like we don't care. And so to me, it's finding ways to, it's less about a funnel and more about like a sieve. Like you're trying to like pan for gold, where if you know exactly what size and shape you're looking for, if it doesn't fit that, it gets tossed out. And there might be some other pan that is catching them and trying to keep some more from there. Like the more bandwidth I think you have, the farther with that you can go. But I think from a bootstrap company's point of view, especially one with thousands of customers, and this is like me, this is you, this is, I'm assuming, a good number of listeners as well, you should not be worrying at all about the people who don't sign up, about the people who start the trial and don't convert, until you do everything you can to first make your current customers spend more with you by giving them more value, because they're going to be the most likely to pay you more. Then it's like in the actual trial, like the step before they become a customer, how do you focus on the ones who really should be a customer? Do that. And like keep going back a step and not saying, let me deal with everyone at this step the same. It's saying, no, like who should be going on to the next step? Let me just focus on them. Then I'll go earlier and say, okay, who's not starting a trial, but they could? Like, what can we do to get them there while kicking out the ones that are just tire kickers and never going to be a good fit? And I think this is just like purely pulled out of my ass, but I feel like in any like reasonably, it doesn't even need to be a big market, I would be shocked if you really like from an objective standpoint, a like expected value standpoint, should be worrying about the pre-trial funnel at all on either sides until you're doing like 5+ million a year. Because I think people just dramatically underestimate the willingness to pay of the best people at any of those stages, and then focus on stages way too early and then on the wrong people at those stages, when like, no, like you're going to be like fighting an uphill battle if you do it the way most of us do. But if you focus on those ones who have already shown they are a good fit. First, like, that's how you grow fast.
I agree in parts. I think that
a lot there. Yeah, sorry.
No, that was a lot. I agree in parts because I think that, like, one, like, we definitely have different paths that new customers go down, right? There's path of an existing podcaster to import their podcast. That's a thing, right? And we kind of have metrics on each of these paths. And it's interesting to see kind of conversion rates and lifetime value and stuff like that. We have like a new podcaster using WordPress. That's a very different kind of customer for us. And then we have a new podcaster that's not using WordPress, right? That's just using Castos. Your thought experiment of like, you shouldn't be able to start an account if you don't have a podcast. Like, it's an interesting thought experiment. What you're getting at is something that we're realizing, and it's anecdotal. And then we backed it up with data recently, which is half of the people that start trials with us are not ready to start a trial. And we have data on this from like survey responses of new trial starts. And so like to us, yeah, it makes us like say, okay, kind of to your point, we can do everything we can to make just the most fucking amazing product ever, right? And like our customers are not ready to be successful, even if we did it all for them, which we do.
So where I would correct that is your customer, that's not your customers, it's your prospects are not. So like
our prospects are not ready to become customers.
In my mind, it's like, it's not that your customers can't be successful. It's like, if your customers can't be successful, they probably shouldn't have become a customer. So it's saying, okay, before you worry about the prospects that aren't ready to become a customer, make sure you bring all the value you can to the ones who are actually customers right now. And that's kind of what I'm saying is, it's not that there's no value in nurturing earlier up in the funnel and getting people ready to become a buyer, but that's way harder, takes way longer to get to revenue. And there's just, mathematically speaking, more things have to go right for them to become a customer. And so that means it's going to be less likely to work. And I think those are the things that, depending on customer lifetime values, size of market, everything else, like, I think getting that right can help a company scale tremendously, because that's what you need to go mass market in something that needs like any education at all. But I think we dramatically underestimate the size a business can get to by ignoring the mass market and saying, I don't want to tell you why this is a problem. I want to focus on the people who know this is a problem, are trying to solve it, have some other thing in place right now. They just don't. It's not working for them. Like, I want to get to people who I don't have to educate. I just need to show them like, hey, this is the solution you're looking for. And obviously that's an oversimplification, but that's more what I'm getting at is, it's not that those people can't be successful without some education could help them, but it's like, what about the people who already have a podcast? They have tens of thousands of downloads. They've been customer for years, but aren't getting them edited by you. They're not doing other things that having potentially booking podcast guests or even just managing their own. Like, there's so many other things that like the willingness to pay of the best customers that we all currently have is orders of magnitude higher than the worst. This ultimately, I think, is my core point, is that I don't think people truly appreciate power laws. People might say like, yeah, I understand 80-20 and this and that, but I don't think they really do, or at least don't fully appreciate it, because it's not just saying 80% of your revenue is going to come from 20% of your customers. Like, that's the face value of it, but it's fractal in the nature that, okay, but of those 20%, 80% of the revenue from them is going to come from 20% of them. And if your business does not have a way to, doesn't have a severely steep value ladder to capitalize on those long tail pieces of it, you're leaving huge amounts of revenue on the table. And so I guess like, if we look at our partners as customers, like we sell them and then they sell their customers, they have hundreds of times more value to us than a standard customer. If we look at people who were customers and then invested in the company, it's a much larger impact on that. If we look at all these other things, it's like, okay, we had the highest end of it, whether it's like investment or major partnerships. And now we're trying to kind of fill in the gap of, okay, but like, what about the just individual customers? How can we provide them more value? And I think like we can double our business easily is the wrong word, but like simply by focusing on them and just ignoring everything else.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to think about like the scale at which we should be thinking. I think a lot of us say like, oh, if I can do this, like the potential is unlimited. I want to grow a big business more than anybody, but like we don't have to, right? Like our business needs to get to like 5 million a year. And then like that's the point where a lot of good things happen. And yeah, I think that you want to think about things that are scalable and have like this unlimited potential and stuff, but it doesn't have to be that. And I think that like reframing the question of like, hey, can we go from 1 or 2 million or whatever to 5 by doing this thing that wouldn't get us to 20 or 100 million, but it would get us to 5. And like, is that the right thing to do with this more kind of concise goal is good because yeah, I mean, like we don't want to be a world killer, like, because the things that we'd have to do that are very different than the things that we are doing to get to the place we want to go. And that's not wrong, I don't think.
Yeah. And additionally, it's like, say you're VC backed, like the traditional Silicon Valley sense, and going for those huge moonshot outcomes. If you have unlimited money, you can spend more and more resources on the really scalable concepts and like audience, which is mass market. Like how do we educate, capture, nurture, send all the other things to get them to become customers. But like that should still never be at the expense of ignoring those with the highest willingness to pay right now, because doing that is way more capital efficient. And so if you don't have unlimited money, that's a way to basically get it, because what would the more diluted your message is and the more steps there are they have to go through before they can convert into dollars. I mean, it's just like the more expensive it's going to be in actual dollars spent, but also in the time to those dollars. And when your capital is constrained, as I think all of ours is to some degree, that's a very expensive path to go down. And it's like you're picking up pennies in front of a steamroller when there's a pile of cash out back. You just don't want to go get it. And it's not that it's like easy to pick up, but that's kind of the thing is, regardless of the goals, I think very few companies, and I don't think that we do this perfectly by any means. There's like every month I'm like, oh shit, like I didn't think about it in this way. And we kind of pivot significantly. But I think most focus way too high up in the funnel. And not just as far as reaching that audience, because I think it's fine to cast a wide net, but I think you need to ruthlessly siphon it down until it's just like, okay, who are the most ready to buy when you're in a capital constrained environment?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. That was a pretty big tangent from where we had planned to go, but it was good. It was good, as always.
Yeah. I'll wrap up my own thoughts on this, but I can't overstate the importance of these concepts. This is what goes back to prioritization and everything else. It's like there really should be step change decisions you can find in your business. It's not that you can't find those by looking outside of the business and ways to grow and more speculative things. Those are just going to be less likely to succeed. But at some point, you probably will need to go there. And in those early days, it's all that. But by starting with what you already have, that's a great path to go down. And I think 80-20 Sales and Marketing by Perry Marshall is a great book. It's like when I listen to it, I hate the audiobook. The narrator is horrible. First time I read it, made a big difference. And every time I've read it since, I've gotten kind of something else. It doesn't stand up as much as I thought, but that's a big one. And then the Russell Brunson stuff, I think, is great on the tactical level, but I think he misses the point. And like he just does an insanely good job of convincing people to buy when it's like, I think he leaves a ton of money on the table. And this is saying this to someone who has like a multi 9-figure ARR business, like leaves a ton of money on the table by kind of casting aside those who are like, hey, you don't need to convince me. Like, I want to just pay you more money to do this thing better rather than like watch some shitty webinar and a few slides to get me to buy the next thing. It's like, no, like I'll pay you 10x if you can just like in some way provide more tangible value. But I'll end on that note. Yeah. No, so I mean, if people have thoughts, questions about any of this, think I'm just nuts and gone off the deep end, there's a very good chance of that too. But as always, we do love hearing from listeners. So you can always reach out at podcast@seekingscale.com or tweet at us. Next week, we'll just talk about the sky is falling crazies on Twitter just because Elon's in charge now. But
unbelievable.
That's for another episode. Anyways, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Greg, for putting up with me.
Yep. So long, everyone.